Now, the next condition is absence of resale possibility. This means that the customer who is buying the product should not be in any position to resell the product at a higher price. Otherwise, what will happen is the profit share will go to the buyer and not to the company. So, this is a very important condition. The third is differences in elasticity of demand. As I said, this comes under which type of price discrimination? We've had three: personal, regional and trade. So, it should be regional. There should be two different elasticities existing in the market. One where the customers are highly sensitive to price, and second where the customers are insensitive to the price. Only then a monopolist can identify the differences and accordingly charge the higher and lower price. Consumers' peculiarities play a very important role. Sometimes our buyers are very ignorant. They are not bothered, or they are indifferent towards the price of the product. They are not aware that the product is sold at a higher price and at a lower price. And also sometimes they carry a illusion: higher the price, better the quality. So many a times the customer's psychology, the customer's attitude helps the company to adopt price discrimination. Therefore, doctors, lawyers, hairdressers are always in a very powerful position of adopting price discrimination. Now, these are another condition, which is regional distances and frontier barriers. It's not possible. Imagine, now you are staying let's say 20 kilometers away from the station and you want to get some documents xeroxed. There is a very nearby stationery near your house only, and they are charging per page 1 rupee. And if you go to the station road, the per page xerox is 25 or 50 paise. You want to only xerox one page. Decide, will you go all the way to the station and get it xeroxed because you will save 50 paise? And or will you prefer to get it xeroxed very near to your house? See, if the question or difference of money is very less and the regional distance is very long, then you will equally amount, land up spending the same amount or even higher amount by traveling that much distance. Therefore, when the regional distances are more, the company is in a powerful position to adopt a price discrimination strategy. It knows that the customer will not travel so much for getting the benefit of a lower price. Therefore, all those shops who are providing you the service at a higher price are aware of this regional distances as a barrier for the customer to adopt, to go and buy the product at a lower price. So, they very clearly adopt regional distances as a condition for price discrimination. What is the main aim behind this price discrimination strategy? It's very simple: to maximize profit. And therefore, we believe that a monopolist will always look for ways in which price discrimination strategy can be adopted. Now, we will pick up one such criteria of a price discriminating monopolist, that is regional price discrimination, selling the same product in two different markets at two different prices. But for that, we will have a very hypothetical situation based on this assumption. Our assumption is we will have two markets A and B. The monopolist wants to make maximum profit. You are enjoying a monopoly in both the markets. You will go and understand the differences in the elasticity of markets, and you will have two prices in two markets. Okay? And the buyers in one market are not able to go in the other market. So, let us take those two markets as one in a rural area, a village, and the other very much away from the village, a semi-urban area. Now, how to decide the size of output? You are a single seller and you want to sell a product, let's say a water heater. Water heater is your product, and you want to sell this water heater in a village and in a semi-urban area. There is a huge kilometers distance between the two different markets. Now you have to first decide your output. How many water heaters will be produced? That will depend on the production cost. Condition: marginal cost equal to the marginal revenue. You have to distribute based on that. You have got let's say 100 water heaters. So 100 water heaters are your equilibrium output, and this 100 has to be divided in both the markets in such a way. Condition here is marginal revenue from both markets is same. That means the revenue that you will earn from selling the water heater, the last water heater in both the market, has to be same. Okay, look at this diagram now. When we look at this diagram, the first diagram, the marginal revenue is very steep. Very steep matlab inelastic demand. So your first market is a market having inelastic demand. The second, the MR and AR is very flatter in slope. So this is a market which is having a elastic demand. Here customers are insensitive. They are ready to pay higher price for the service because most people are working. They do not have many substitutes available for heating water. Either they have to heat the water in a gas stove. So water heater is a necessity for the people here. Here we will take a rural area where people are price sensitive. So they will only buy the water heater if it is lower priced, because they can always heat the water by using wood and other sources. So substitutes are available. And you want to be a monopoly. You want your company's product to be a monopoly. First, we will look at your company, which is the last diagram. Your equilibrium output is 100 heaters based on the principle of equating marginal cost with marginal revenue. You want to divide this output in both the markets in such a way that your MR, see this horizontal line. This horizontal line is your MR. The revenue earned on selling the product has to be same in both the market price. So what you do is you take this horizontal line in first diagram and decide the MR. Second line, again you decide the MR. When you look at the market, MR is only the price at which you will sell the last unit of the output. Look at the demand. Now what is the demand? One is having elastic demand and the other is having inelastic demand. So the very first, this is a very steep graph. So your AR graph, this is the demand for the product. This is the demand and the price is P1. The people want the water heater. So the demand is very high. I mean, the demand is inelastic and therefore you quote a very high price, which is P1. In the second graph, your AR2, that is average revenue, is very flatter in slope. So here the people are sensitive to price. And they are ready to buy the heater, water heater, only if the price is P2. So the price is lower in the second market, but the price is higher in the first market. So this is price discrimination. The same quality water heaters, but they are sold at a higher price in market 1 and at a lower price in market 2. You know why? Because here the people are having a huge demand for the water heater. The demand is inelastic. So you are able to sell at a higher price. Whereas in the second market, people are price sensitive. So you are able to sell it only at a lower price. But in both the markets, you are able to make maximum profit. This is what a price discriminating monopolist will do. This diagram reflects regional price discrimination. It explains you that a monopolist having full control over price and output adopts price discrimination by first deciding its equilibrium output and dividing that equilibrium output in such a way that the revenue earned from selling the last product in both the market becomes same. Now we go to a next concept, which is known as dumping. Dumping is also an extreme form of price discrimination, but it is applicable at the world level. Let's understand what dumping is. Dumping means selling a product in foreign market at a price lower than in the home market. So if you take the case of China, the hometown for the China is its own country. And when a company in China wants to sell the products in India, for them India will be a foreign market. We have to prove that in dumping, a single seller is selling the product at a lower price in a foreign market, but at a higher price in the home market. The best way to understand this is by using a diagram. Look at this diagram. In this diagram, you will see that we have plotted the average revenue and marginal revenue graphs, which are downward sloping, and we have written the letter H. What is H? H is home market. H stands for home market. That means ARH and MRH are the average revenue and marginal revenue in the home market faced by a single company. Our company is a Chinese company. It is making some, wind chimes. Okay. So this company which is making wind chimes is facing a downward sloping AR and MRH. Under which market structure do you find the average and the marginal revenue is downward sloping? Come on, think. You have been studying about AR, MR and market structure. Yes, correct. It is monopoly. That means in your home country, a individual seller is a monopolist. And being a monopolist, it will be facing downward sloping average and marginal revenue graph. But the moment you enter a foreign market, which is world market, W, the graph becomes horizontal. Under which market structure do you find a horizontal AR and MR graph? Yes, correct. Perfect competition. So under perfect competition, the AR is equal to MR W. W means world market. So we come to the conclusion here that being a seller, being a single seller, a monopolist, you are a price maker in the home market facing a downward sloping AR and MRH. But when you are selling this product in the world market, you are a price taker. But when you are a perfect competitor, you are a price taker. So students, the ARH and MRH represents revenue graph faced by the country, monopolist in its home country. Whereas the horizontal, that is PW, ARW equal to MRW, is a case where you are facing the revenue in a foreign country, where you are a perfect competitor. Therefore, in the home country, you are selling a limited quantity, that is OH, at a higher price, OPH. But when you are selling it in a world market, you are selling OM, which is a larger span of output, at a lower price, which is PW. Price discrimination is proved. Selling less at a higher price in home country and selling more at a lower price in a foreign country. This is how we prove dumping. Now, why is dumping adopted by a monopolist? There are very technical and financial reasons given for that, which we will discuss here. The very first reason is to maximize profit. So therefore, in order to maximize profit, the monopolist will sell less in its home country, like in our case it was OH, and sell the remaining amount in the foreign country so that they can capture maximum of the foreign market and cover up the cost and still make huge profits. Second is to increase output to sell in the world market. And this is because they enjoy economies of scale. The first one was a financial reason. This is a technical reason. Technical reason is using the plant capacity to such an extent that you are deriving huge benefits. What are economies of scale? they are large scale operation leading to lowering of cost. To penetrate into the foreign market, which is again a technical reason to capture the foreign market, and this is the reason why a monopolist will keep on enjoying a monopoly power by using dumping. Here we have a case where a combination of perfect competition and monopoly comes together, making a market monopolistic competition. Now, in monopolistic competition, you will find that there are large number of sellers and they are all selling differentiated products, fast moving consumer goods. So whether it's electronics, whether it is fabrics, shoes, retail outlets, companies making accessories, furnitures, all come under the category of monopolistic competition. What is monopolistic? It is a type of market structure where you will find the following features: large number of firms, absence of interdependence, each firm has its own brand. So they are selling the market their own brand and they don't have to worry about their competitors. Freedom of entry, the condition, market conditions or the business conditions are very relaxed. There is easy availability of licenses and less barriers to entry. Product differentiation. When you talk about product differentiation, the most important feature of monopolistic competition. How can products be differentiated? On the basis of size, color, quality, shape, even price. And brand plays a very important role. Selling cost. Definitely, the products are differentiated, but they are close substitutes. So advertisement always will play a very important role in marketing the product. And there is a concept of group used, which is used by an economist called Chamberlain. Professor Chamberlain said that in monopolistic competition, there are n number of companies who are making close substitutes. Now let's take for example watches and soap. There are so many brand of watches and soap. That means all those companies, all those firms who are making the watches will be recognized as one group. So we will say automobile sector. In automobile sector, all the firms who are making automobiles will be considered as a group. And then we will have to observe how they compete with each other with respect to their product differentiation. Automobile sector is the best sector to apply the condition of monopolistic competition. Now, here we are going to discuss about production cost and selling cost. It has been found that in monopolistic competition, it's very important to differentiate between the cost that are incurred by the companies. And here we differentiate it into two categories. And these two categories are production cost on one side and selling cost on the other. Selling cost, advertising. It is basically done to create demand, whereas production cost is done to meet demand. Economists believe that selling costs are a waste and production costs are essential. These are some of the viewpoints given on differences between the production cost and selling cost. We say production cost is incurred in all markets, whether it's perfect, imperfect. But selling costs are very, very important in monopolistic competition. Production cost is done to meet demand, but selling costs are done in order to create demand. So once the products, once production starts, the expenses have to be incurred. There is no escape. But selling costs are done because you want to promote the product and attract the producers towards the company's product. Production cost always influences supply. Selling cost always influences demand. So selling cost is more connected with the demand side of the market, whereas production cost is connected with the supply side of the market. Production cost is always in proportion to output, whereas selling cost has no relation to output. Production cost is essential, and as I said, economists are of the view that selling cost are a waste. So students, as we were discussing the difference between production cost and selling cost, we have here to discuss the two views, one who are in favor of selling cost and the other who are against selling cost. We have titled it as how selling costs are wasteful and how selling costs are not a waste. The people who are against selling costs say that costs are incurred in retaliation. There is going to be a advertising war which you see happening in most of the monopolistic competition markets. When one company promotes its product, calling a brand ambassador like Amitabh Bachchan, then other will bring Shah Rukh Khan to advertise their product. So it is in retaliation. And in that advertising retaliation, they forget about how much they are spending. The others say they are not waste, they are informing about their product and it is a market role. So if Amitabh Bachchan is promoting the product, then why not hire Shah Rukh Khan for promoting the product? There is nothing wrong in that. They result in rise in price. Now the people who are against it say that always selling costs are the major reason for customers landing up paying the product, buying the product at a higher cost or a higher price. But the people who are in favor say, why not? If there would have been no ad agencies, people would not have got jobs. So it's a very strong point of employment, especially in a country like India, which is facing large scale unemployment. It misleads the consumers. Sometimes the product is promoted to such an extent that the customer gets carried over by the emotions and land up buying the product. Customers spend on transport to buy from a specific market, whereas prices do not rise because of advertisement. So people who are against advertisement believe that no, it is not at all right, because it is always not very effective. But the people who favor marketing says if they are not effective, there are better ways in which the companies try to market their product, and that is the only way to reach the customers, informing them about the product. Well, this debate will always be continuously going on. There is no end to that. We will move ahead to the next, about if a monopolist competition, if a firm, let's say if you take a if you take Timex watches, or if you take Samsung, if Samsung is facing a downward sloping AR and MR graph like a monopolist, it will also use the golden rule of equilibrium, that is point E. So it will decide how many watches or how many mobiles to be manufactured, and if it wants to make profit, it will always operate at the lowest or falling average cost. This diagram reflects super normal profit. Why? Because at OM output, the average cost of production is less than the average revenue. So the distance QR indicates maximum profit. Look here, once the competition gets intensified, the economists who are not much in favor of advertising say, because of rising selling cost, the cost starts going up, and when the cost increases, and if it becomes tangent. Now this is not because of the selling cost. We are here only going to talk about production cost. We do not include the selling cost here, and therefore we say that when competition increases and the cost starts rising, the individual seller will have to only settle down with normal profits. It's a case of normal profit because the average cost and average revenue are tangent. So remember, in monopolistic competition, going back to this diagram, like a monopolist, the monopolistic competitor can make super normal profit because of brand loyalty, because of product differentiation. But because it also has a condition of perfect competition, free entry, lack of barriers to entry, many new companies can enter into the business and the profits can get divided, and a super normal profit firm can become a normal profit maker. This is where you come to a conclusion that a monopolist continuously enjoys supernormal profit in the long run, but a monopolistic competitor may enjoy supernormal profit in the short run, but due to competition, its supernormal profits will go away, and in the long run, like perfect competition, it will settle down with normal profit. Therefore, we say monopolistic competition is a combination of perfect competition and monopoly. This is more a real day today's market. With this, we will be moving to the last type of market structure, which is a market of few sellers. Because there are strong barriers to entry and because there are strict conditions, it is not possible for everybody to enter into this market structure. Petroleum, pharmaceutical, fertilizers, and also cement and steel, infrastructure. These are some of the sectors where you find oligopoly market structure. Oligopoly is a market structure which is in which a few sellers are existing. They are highly interdependent over each other because they are few firms, but they are large. They have a large market share and there is a tough competition between them. There are different types of oligopolist. The first, pure oligopoly. They are companies who are selling identical products, cement, steel. They are almost standardized. So when a company is making a standardized product, we call them as pure oligopolist. But the moment they start differentiating their product, how can a company differentiate its product? Of course, brand is one. Second is certain peculiar changes. Like for example, if you take automobile, four-wheelers. If there are only few companies making four-wheelers, then they will definitely keep certain distinct differentiation in their products, which is not possible for others to copy. That will make it differentiated oligopoly. Second is open and closed. Free entry conditions. You find this in case of telecom now. I'm talking about production of mobiles. First there were few players. Now when the players started increasing, the oligopolist market structure turned to monopolistic competition. Print and media has been a open oligopoly with FDI entering into media and broadcasting now. Airlines again will come under closed oligopoly. Not very easy for all airlines to get the license of flying their aircraft to different destinations. Partial oligopoly is where you have one leader. There will be one company who will be the controller, who will be launching its product first in the market with a given price, and then others will copy it. Full oligopoly, there is no leader, no follower. Everybody has their own independent pricing strategies. That's happening in case of newspaper in the print industry. Each one of them have their own pricing strategy. Collusive oligopoly is where there is an agreement. This happens when there is too much of price war existing among the players, and therefore what happens is that they decide to come together and make a cartel. The best example of cartel is OPEC, oil producing exporting countries. They have all come together. However, making an agreement is illegal, like pharmaceutical companies. If there are only 2 to 3 companies who are making life-saving drugs and they decide to join together to become monopolist, then that will be a collusive oligopoly, which is illegal. You have non-collusive where they cannot come into any type of agreement. So these are some of the ways in which we recognize the behavior of these few sellers and classify them into categories called pure oligopoly, closed oligopoly, open, partial, collusive, non-collusive. These are some of the characteristics of an oligopoly. Whenever you want to look at an oligopolist behavior, you have to look at these conditions. First, there is competition among few, high interdependence, possibility of collusion by price agreement. The companies will decide at what price they will sell the product. Cement. Cement companies are doing this today. Rigidity in pricing. The prices don't change because of the fear of losing the market. There are strong barriers to entry. Excessive expense on advertising and indeterminateness about the demand curve. To understand this whole thing, we will be presenting you a diagram which will help you understand all these features of a oligopolist, which is popularly called as the kinky demand curve. Let us understand this with a very simple diagram. Look at this diagram carefully. When you look at this diagram, you will find that there are two slopes of the demand curve. This is a typical demand curve which an oligopolist will be facing. We call it as a kink demand curve because of the change in slope. The decay part of the demand curve is said to be very flatter in slope, and the KD part is said to be very steep. We will be understanding this diagram by drawing it on the board so that you understand it very well, and with that we will be completing this chapter. So students, as I was explaining you the kinky demand curve, let us understand it much better by drawing the diagram on the board. We have the X and the Y axis as usual, measuring output on the X axis and price on the Y axis. This is the rigidity pricing condition. Rigidity pricing means OP is the price which is fixed and OQ is the output of one seller. Let's say when we take this as a case of a telecom service provider who is providing its services at OP price having OQ subscribers. Let's say if it is Airtel, just an assumption. Now, Airtel will be facing a kinky demand curve. This part of the graph is flatter in slope, indicating relatively elastic demand. We'll call it as DK. After K, when I draw the graph, it will have a steep slope. That is D dash. K, D dash. This is called relatively inelastic. Now, what Paul Sweezy wants to talk here is that suppose if this is the graph faced by Airtel, or let's take the best what's happening now is the domestic airlines. In the domestic airlines, we'll talk of two competitors. One is IndiGo and other is GoAir. Okay. So now IndiGo is facing the DK D dash graph. What IndiGo does is it drastically brings down the price to P1. It brings down the price by, let's say, 10% on its airline ticket from one destination to other. This is what is the demand for that destination in the market. It is not able to capture a large part of the market share. It makes a loss because a 10% fall in price is giving him only a 0.5% increase in sale. You know why this happens? Because in oligopoly, when one player brings down the price, the rivals, competitors, immediately follow that strategy. So that means when IndiGo brought down the price of its airline ticket, all the other airlines who were its closest competitors having the same service started following that strategy, and they also started reducing the price because they did not wanted the market share to go to IndiGo alone. This is called following the price reduction strategy of one oligopolist. Next time, the oligopolist will increase the price. Okay, when the price is increased by a very small amount, it loses a large fraction of the market. That's because the demand curve, which is DK, is relatively elastic. When one company increases the price, So when IndiGo increases the price, none of its closest competitors follow that. They let the airline increase the price, but they do not change their pricing strategy. So IndiGo makes a big loss by its customer moving to other competitors. This is called as price war strategy. This is called as a strategy where when one player increases the price, others don't follow and they don't let their player win. When one bring down the price, others immediately copy because they don't again want him to win. This situation is called as a situation of price rigidity. We call it as high level of interdependence. Therefore, individual oligopolist is facing a very indeterminate demand graph. It cannot decide whether to increase the price or to decrease the price based on how the rivals will react. This is popularly called as the kinky demand curve model. So with that, students, we have successfully completed the chapter 12 on market structure and price determination. You understood in this chapter how a market structure plays a very, very important role in understanding the price and output decision of individual players. Starting with perfect competition, moving to monopoly, bringing monopolistic competition, and ending with oligopoly. Thank you.